Advanced Studio Classroom is on the air.
Are you an expert, but you want to work part-time? Today's program might be for you. Hello, listeners, and welcome back to another Advanced Studio Classroom. My name is Simon. You are joining me and my co-host Linda in the studio today as we look into the second part of our August career article. Linda, what is this article?
So we are talking about part-time expertise.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday we were introduced to this. It's not a new concept. It's been around, but it's become more of a trend now among highly skilled workers or executives. So having part-time executives.
I like to think that I have part-time expertise, like when I'm not feeling tired or when I'm focused, I am an expert, but at other times I am not doing that well. But that is not what they are talking about when they say part-time expertise, right?
No, it's the actual time that they are working at the organization or the time that they're being employed.
Yeah. So we sort of talked yesterday about how the term part-time job often makes people think about kind of low-level, unskilled work that's done by very young people or whatever, you know. But basically here, they were talking about like high-level, highly skilled professionals. They actually specifically in this article are usually talking about executives like CEOs and CFOs. But, it, you know, broadly, it could apply to any skilled professional.
Mm-hmm.
And them doing that profession on a part-time basis with different companies. That was kind of the idea, right?
Yes.
So kind of a new way of thinking about executives working, I suppose. It told us in the subtitle, paying a fraction of the cost for highly skilled workers.
Right. And so that was the benefit. Like if you only have, you're only employing an executive for, or part-time, you don't have to pay a full-time salary.
Yeah.
And that works for a lot of companies and organizations because they might not have the budget to pay for a full-time executive.
So we are sort of assuming, listeners, that you understand why it would be great to have a professional part-time job. But maybe we should say it. Maybe you need more time with your family. You have aging parents or you have responsibilities at home like young children, things like that. Maybe you're just heading towards retirement and you want to kind of ease into that retirement gracefully over the last 10 years of your work life. You're a highly skilled professional. Mm-hmm. Maybe you need to make a change and you have this set of amazing skills that you don't want to just waste by taking a much simpler, less meaningful, less complicated job. There's lots of reasons why this might work for workers, but like you were saying, Linda, the reason it seems to be working for employers is because they can save money.
That's true.
We were introduced to a couple of other ideas yesterday. The idea of unbundling a role was prominent. The idea being that, you know, we sort of think about, well, even for example, the terms we used CEO, CFO, CMO, what was that? Chief
Marketing
Officer. Mm-hmm. We talked about Technology Officer. And when we say these terms, most of you listeners are going to have a very clear idea of what that person does in your head. But it doesn't necessarily have to be that way. Like yesterday, we talked about how IT departments often are doing a very wide range of things for a lot of other departments. And so you can change the way you sort of organize these tasks. And when you break them up and separate them basically into different tasks, that's the unbundling process, right?
Right.
So I guess the idea being there that you could hire three part-time people to do what used to be one full-time person's job kind of depends on what's best for your company, what you can afford, what's good for the workers, because you're going to have a hard time finding a good worker if you're not offering them a good deal. And you're going to have a hard time finding an employer who's willing to go along with your deal if you're not going to do a good worker, right? So hopefully these things kind of match up. Nonetheless, today we're going to continue on with the second part of this. If you have your August magazine, I would encourage you to open it up. It will help you with your English learning. And by getting a magazine, you're doing the thing that is the easiest way of helping us out at Advanced Radio. So I would encourage you to do that. Without further delay, Linda, you want to do the first reading for us? We're going to do three today, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. Take it away.
Since COVID, the pace of change, geopolitics, climate change, war, technology, all of those megatrends has meant that organizations have a lot to cope with. And the senior leaders have started looking more for outside help, she says. They might have a CFO or CMO who's employed full-time, but those individuals are overwhelmed in a turbulent world, and they need an agile talent structure.
All right. So since COVID, here, of course, they're talking about COVID-19, the pandemic, the pace of change has meant organizations have a lot to cope with. So basically, they're saying things are changing very quickly since COVID, right? And as a result of that, people have to find ways to deal with those changes. But then in the middle of that sentence, they list some of the things that are changing.
Yeah, and included in those, geopolitics, which is how geography, like location, natural resources, borders, influence politics and international relations.
Yeah.
And an example of that would be the Iran war that started in March of this year.
Oh, yeah, and the oil.
Yeah,
the inflation
and the closing of the Strait of Hormuz.
Well, and before that, I suppose the ongoing issue of tariffs, all of those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Trade fights between companies, they all fall under
those
geopolitics.
Those are big things that were happening.
Yeah.
So the changes in geopolitics, climate change, which we know very well about. War, technology.
We might have put Iran in the wrong category there. It definitely goes in both of these categories, right? Yeah. And technology. Like, I suppose the most obvious example of this is the introduction of AI to the workplace, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's, there's so many things coming.
Yes, and rapidly
changing,
like constant changes. And
so the end result being, companies aren't just dealing with one crisis at a time. There are a whole bunch of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
And they go on to say here, basically, they might have a CFO or a CMO who's employed full-time, but maybe that person, it's not just the company is dealing with more than one crisis. That person is specifically dealing with more than one large-scale crisis at a time. And the result is they feel overwhelmed, which means they can't keep up, right? Because the world is turbulent. What's turbulent?
Turbulent means that there are a lot of changes, sudden changes.
Mm-hmm.
And like we listed the things before, that is the world that we're living in.
Yeah. And so they need an agile talent structure. When you're agile, I remember my PE teacher talking to us about agility.
Mm-hmm.
He basically said it was, the ability to turn and move quickly.
Yeah. So being flexible, being adaptive to changes, right?
So it wasn't so much being able to run quickly in a straight line. It was being able to weave quickly between things and run in kind of zigzags and start and stop and all of those things.
Yeah. To be able to roll with whatever is given to you and be able to turn, to switch direction. Yeah.
So what does this mean when you're talking about a talent structure? Well, presumably, it's, you need to be able to start and stop and change what you're doing with talent, which basically means workers, quickly. And so you can sort of imagine a situation in which all of a sudden your company is being affected by tariffs. And rather than have the whole company focus on that, you choose a group of workers who focus on tariffs. But of course, one of the difficulties of that situation is, some days there were tariffs, the next days there were not, right? And so you need to be able to okay, everybody, forget about the tariffs.
Yeah.
Let's move on to something else. So you need to be able to have people focusing on different things and changing what they're doing very quickly.
Yeah.
If you can do that, you have an agile talent structure. One of the things that's interesting about this is we mentioned yesterday that what we were calling fractional expertise, right? was originally much more common among small companies because they deal with this agility much better, usually, right? Larger organizations have more established organizational structures. And so by moving fractional expertise into bigger companies, they're basically giving those companies more agility.
Exactly.
So it's kind of an interesting idea how they kind of go hand in hand, the two things.
So it just allows them to be able to adapt to the changes more quickly and efficiently.
Exactly. That brings us to our second reading, which is under the section title, Direct Access to Experts. Linda, I feel kind of bad making you do all the readings here, but you are the reader. You're
no
the designated
problem.
Reader.
I got it.
Oh, thank you.
Direct access to experts. When large organizations needed outside assistance in the past, they traditionally looked to major consulting and advisory firms. Many are now discovering that they can find specialized talent at a lower cost by engaging a part-time temporary expert. Those fractional experts may have even been previously employed by one of those big consulting firms, or may have helped a similar organization overcome a similar challenge in the past. You're seeing very large corporations, the brands you know, hiring these fractioners intentionally to get access to the talent, says Ron Harpaz, the founder and CEO of Lettuce Financial, a fintech platform for solopreneurs earning six figures. They don't want to go to finance and justify a job and put it in the budget for the next 5 years and deal with all the support systems around it.
Now, listeners, before you start writing angry letters, you know, complaining about how I made Linda do all the readings, I'm going to let you in on a little advanced radio secret. The readings are recorded separately. So
I don't think that's a secret.
Linda thinks this is not a secret. I think it is not obvious because we often joke about it and talk as though you are doing the reading in person. But they are done in advance to make sure that the article, it's kind of part of the editing process even, right? To make sure it's smooth and all of the wording is correct, things like that. So it is done in advance. Nonetheless, we're talking here about direct access to experts. Now, I don't know about you, Linda, but I have had times of crisis where I basically just want to call someone and have them answer the phone.
And reassure
say,
you, right?
Yeah, it's going to be okay. I know how to do that. Don't worry. I can help you out.
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the big benefits of this. Tell us about it.
So when large organizations needed outside assistance in the past, they traditionally looked to major consulting and advisory firms. So they would get that reassurance or the help that they needed by consulting outside the business. So now many are now discovering that they can find specialized talent at a lower cost by engaging a part-time temporary expert. That's what we've been talking about.
So I would say, again, this is sort of an example of large organizations discovering what smaller organizations have known for a long time.
Yeah.
Like I know, you know, I know a number of executives who have what we used to call a Rolodex. You know what a Rolodex is? Basically a list of contact information for different people, of people who they are personally able to call to help them out in difficult situations, right? I think this is, you know, so this idea of having a consulting company, a major consulting company, that's sort of a larger scale, big company traditional approach. But there are smaller, cheaper ways that people have been using for this for quite a while. It's just kind of a rediscovering of that in larger companies. So I guess as we head into the second paragraph of this reading, Linda, the obvious question is like, how do I get this job? Like, what must I do to prepare myself for a career as a fractional expert?
Well, they probably don't have to do that much because they already have that experience, usually working for one of those big consulting firms.
It's like you basically do the job as a full-time person until you have expertise. And then as your career develops, you have a little more choice. Like maybe you can leave the big consulting company, right? Or maybe you can semi-retire but return to your original job as a contractor. These are all things that have been very common for a long time among specialized senior professionals, right?
Right. And we mentioned yesterday a lot of these part-time temporary experts, they're in this position because they were laid off, because they can no longer work at those big firms or those big companies because of whatever reason, budgetary constraints or because that role, you know, just can't be supported anymore. So they now are seeking employment, but on a part-time basis because that's what is available.
Yeah. As we continue in the third paragraph, you see sort of a return to that focus on agility here, where they're saying you see these large corporations, brands you know, so these are like famous companies, are hiring these fractioners. That's a different take on it. Fractioners. Mm-hmm, what are they?
Just adding an ER to that to make it a person. It's not really a word.
Like right? A person who is swimming is a swimmer.
Mm-hmm.
A person who fights is a fighter, right? A police office. Police officers. Yeah, that's a bad example, that one. But the point is you can add ER to make it the person, right? So these fractioners are intentionally being hired to get access to the talent. So why do this instead of those big consulting firms? Maybe it's money. But as we see, according to Lettuce Financial, there's another advantage. It is that agility. They sort of say here, they don't want to. And when they say they here, I think they mean basically decision makers at the big companies mm-hmm. or the big companies don't want to go to finance. That means like a budget meeting with the finance department and have to justify a job, explain why they need a highly paid expert to be paid as a full-time worker, and then put it in the budget for the next 5 years and deal with all of the, you know, administrative yeah. red tape mm-hmm. around that. Instead, they just sort of say, we need this special budget to pay for this contract.
For this particular
this year,
period of time.
It's a smaller yeah. amount of money, mm-hmm. so it's easier to get approval.
Yeah, shorter period of time. And I've seen this even in like there is a, or well before at least, like the prestige that goes along with like hiring this executive. And I saw it in a nonprofit company that I used to work for.
When you say prestige, you mean like a famous executive?
Like they, yeah, they're well known. Maybe they did really good work at their previous or current employer.
Yeah.
And so you want to attract them because you want them to do the same thing at your yeah. organization. And they come with, you know,
so it's like if Studio Classroom brings in Steve Jobs back in the day to reinvent
yeah,
our product
I guess
line,
you could, yeah.
Something like that.
So yeah, we would expect him to do big things, right?
But of course, I don't know if our listeners know this, but we probably could not have afforded
no.
Steve Jobs.
No way. Yeah,
but we might have been able to afford 10% of Steve Jobs.
Yeah, maybe, just a fraction, maybe
that's
less than 10%.
We bring him in for a workshop
uh-huh.
to sort of mm-hmm. share wisdom, things like that.
Yeah, so this nonprofit that I was working for, they got this executive, fundraising executive, and I forget her exact like C-suite title, but she did have one, to transform the company, right? So they kind of saw her as this magic pill, and we know there is no such thing as a magic pill. And they brought her, they got her to come to move halfway across the country to work there, and they ended up having to let her go like after a couple of years because they couldn't actually afford her her full-time salary, which was a huge amount because these executives, you know, that's what they require, like big salaries. So maybe they weren't satisfied with what she was doing. Like they couldn't justify continue paying her this large salary if she wasn't accomplishing what they expected her to accomplish. So
what you are saying is if they had taken a fractional approach, it might have worked out better.
Yeah, that probably would have been better. But back then, maybe that wasn't a thing. You
yeah.
know, and they wouldn't have even considered that.
This is kind of an aside, but in the small organizations I have worked for a long time, the focus has been on like a term we sometimes call these people jacks of all trades,
mm-hmm.
which basically means the idea is workers who work for small companies are frequently not specialists in that they're like an accounting specialist or a finance specialist. They're specialists in that they're like small company specialists, meaning they're comfortable doing like a really wide range of jobs up to a certain level. So that's been kind of the focus. But the problem with that, of course, is you can't be an expert on all of those things.
Exactly.
Right? So I suppose with a fractional approach, you can have experts do those wide range of jobs. So it's just kind of another tool in the toolbox, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let's do our last reading, Linda. Shifting Perceptions. I mean, we've already been talking about that in the last minute or two, but let's read it together.
Shifting Perception. Before the term gained traction, those who offered what we'd now describe as fractional services were given labels that Harper says didn't really match their level of expertise. Consultant, contractor, 1099, those are accounting terms. Fractional is a business term. It says, I'm going to solve your problem, and I can do it in a fractional capacity. That new label has shifted the perception of this category of solopreneurs from something many felt they had to hide on their resumes to something they advertise. They say out loud, I'm so great at what I do that I can help your business in 10 hours or 20 hours a week, Harpaz says. It's not a gig, it's a destination.
Okay, so this whole paragraph, it's kind of the writer acknowledging what we've been saying all along. This isn't really a new idea. It's really just kind of become more popular and got new jargon or specialized terms attached to it, right? That's kind of the idea here. They use the term specifically before the term gained traction. So the term there is gained traction, which means kind of became popular enough to be in regular use. But the term they're talking about specifically there is like fractional expert or fractional worker or solopreneur before this terminology became popular. Those who offered what we'd now describe as fractional services had different labels, right? But those labels, and we also talked about this when we were talking about part-time jobs, didn't really match their level of expertise.
Right. So previously, those labels included consultant, contractor, 1099 or 1099. And this refers to the tax form in the United States that independent contractors would have to fill out to file their taxes.
Very briefly, let's talk about that. Like, what is the difference between a consultant and a contractor? A consultant is basically paid for expert advice or research and reporting and kind of is associated with like knowledge work, right? Contractor, I mean, it literally means you have a contract to perform a task, meaning you're not a full-time regular employee. You have a special employment relationship. But it does kind of get associated when compared to consultant with like blue-collar, more physical work. Like contractors renovate your house. Consultants come up with fresh ideas for how you can market your products.
So they refer kind of to particular types of work or services that would be provided.
No, I didn't know this, but 1099, that's an American tax form, right? And it's the tax form for when you are, you give the worker this form to show that they have earned this income, but not as a regular employee, instead as like a consultant or a contractor, I guess, one of those two. Those are accounting terms because they're how you describe the payment relationship with the person, right? We say, oh, this is not a regular worker, it's a contractor. We give them a 1099 form, right? And so as a result of that, it's just an accounting term. And so they're saying here that fractional is instead a business term. I don't really see the difference, do you?
I think the way you say things does make a difference.
I suppose there is, you know, like when you hear someone is a consultant, you don't think of them as part of your team. But when a person is a fractional worker, they might be more part of your team, like a regular worker.
Right.
Just not there all the time.
it's maybe more inclusive.
So there might be a change in the feeling. It goes on to say that new label has shifted the perception, so the way people understand this category of solopreneurs. Now, you mentioned what that was yesterday. You kind of explained it in depth. I don't think we've talked about it today. It's basically like an entrepreneur who starts a business but works solo or alone, right? So they're self-employed. From something many felt they had to hide on their resumes to something they advertise.
Yeah. Okay. So before, because you had these terms like consultant, contractor, 1099, it probably, it didn't sound as good and might be something you wanted to hide because it wasn't like full-time work and maybe didn't look good on your resume. But now, being a fractional expert, that has a much better ring to it and is something that is looked upon more favorably now.
I understand what they are saying here, but I don't know that I agree. I think it depends how old you are and how long you've been in an industry, you know? Because if you've been in an industry a long time and then you're working as a consultant, it's kind of a natural career progression, right? You do some consulting work because everybody knows you're an expert. But if you're 22 and you're, you know, I don't know, maybe it's viewed differently. I suppose it depends on how it works out. Nonetheless, we have a fresh way of looking at it here, I assume. And so what are they really saying now? If they're using this term, they are saying out loud, I'm so great at what I do that I can help your business in 10 hours or 20 hours a week. It's not a gig, it's a destination. Ah, that's why it's negative.
Yeah.
I forgot about young people because they're talking here about gig work.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Part-time work being like Uber driver.
Right, or just something that you do temporarily.
This perception, it's all a generation thing. Nonetheless, I'm glad the term is out there and that this kind of work has been given a rightful, respected place in the workplace. Gives all of us more options, hey?
Yep.
Yeah. That brings us to the end of our career article. We hope you'll join us again soon for another Advanced Studio Classroom. Until then, I'm Simon.
I'm Linda.
Saying goodbye.
Goodbye.